Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I'm Brian Emhauser. You can find me and all that we do on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, all the places at Hawk Blogger. And it's a rare Sunday morning edition of Hawk Blogger Mornings. Usually, you know, going to the game where we got a post-game show headed our way sometime during the day. But today, Seahawks have already done their work for the week. They won the big game. And so we get to hang out this morning with good pal Rob Staton of the Seahawks draft blog, representing, I guess, Ryan Grubb. Is this a Ryan Grubb tribute on your head?
It most definitely isn't. So I am obsessed with the college football hats. And at the end of my trip, my family had the misfortune of going somewhere where there were several of the shops that sell different hats. Before we got on the plane, and I bought a bunch of Florida-based college ones, and there was an Alabama one there, and I do have a lot of respect for the production line at Alabama, and I'm also a huge Jarran Reed fan. So I really, this is more of a tribute for Jarran Reed and the fact that Alabama won yesterday than anything else.
When did you become a Jarran Reed fan?
I just genuinely love the attitude. Like, he's the one who was in the huddle before the game. Like, he seems to be, I've always felt like a good team has to have the Red Bryant types, mm-hmm. you know, the people who are not necessarily your best players, but you still need people like that who are the soul of the team. And just the fact that Mike McDonald will often hand to him in the locker room after a game and just say, you know, say something, and he'll just say something really, really manly in that point. And I just enjoy him. And it's quite, I mean, he's been in the league 10 years now. It feels like yesterday, that 2016 draft.
So this is a post-draft crush? This was not a Seahawks draft blog pre-draft crush?
I mean, I did think he was a first-round player, but I didn't expect the Seahawks to draft him. Like, I don't think anybody expected him to be there. And then they took Jermaine Afeti, didn't they? And then traded up for Jarran Reed. Wow, that's a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, because we'll talk about some things that we've gotten right and wrong in a little bit, but I never expected him to be a guy that was a pass rusher. Like, I never thought he'd see double digits in sacks. I never thought he'd come close to that. And he's not going to get 10 sacks this year, but he's much more of a complete defensive tackle than I gave him credit for coming out of school.
The amazing thing about him at Alabama was that he could anchor, I think, probably better than any defensive tackle I've ever watched. Like, he didn't really do anything else at Alabama.
Right.
But he would just sort of plant his feet and then would control a double team, like one blocker in each hand sort of thing. And then there'd be no movement there. And I don't think I've ever seen that before or after. And it's obviously, since he's coming to the league, like you said, the sacks and the production that he's had has been surprising, because there was no real evidence of that at Alabama. But he's a talented player. And I just think you do need people like that in your team, especially when you've got such, you know, explosive, talented players like Leonard Williams and Byron Murphy who can sort of play alongside him. I think he's such an integral player. I enjoy watching him. I enjoy sort of seeing him. Like, I was looking at, it sounds really sad, but I was looking out when they did the Mike McDonald post-game video after this game, which I was eagerly anticipating. I'm kind of like looking for where he is, and he's there, he's right behind the coach, you know, with Byron Murphy there. So he seems to be one of coach's favorites. So I'm down with that. And I thought, I'm going to wear the hat. They won yesterday. A big Jarran Reed fan. I bought the hat really because of Jarran Reed. So there we go.
Well, you know, I'm wearing this hat for you, right?
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I always got to represent Rob. But I have one more thing on Alabama. So I was checking just things on YouTube, and a reel, that our friend Will Hart made of this show a year ago when Ryan Grubb got fired, has gone massively viral. Like, it just, like, 500,000 people have watched it in the last 2 days. And I'm like, why is this going viral? And then I search, and I think there's a lot of Alabama fans that are pretty unhappy with Ryan Grubb in Alabama. And I think that maybe this has gained steam. They're hoping that he was fired at Alabama after this playoff game. So
I get that, by the way. I was watching the game yesterday when I did it. I had a long road trip yesterday for work, and then I got back about 11 o'clock at night, and then watched the Alabama Oklahoma game back on sort of playback. And it's so many of the same issues that we saw in Seattle. It's this total inability to run, this almost like refusal to run, the dependence on the quarterback who can be very good at his time, Ty Simpson, but is also very capable of having off days, a bit like Geno Smith. It not really maximizing the best players that you have. It's so similar. Mm-hmm. And yet, I guess because they won yesterday, the Alabama fans will not care. And that'll be a very interesting game when they play Indiana next week.
Yeah,
in the new year.
I turned that game off, assuming Oklahoma had won it. And it was like, I don't need to watch this. Alabama hasn't been that good this year. And then give them credit, they did come back and win. So we'll see how long that season goes. But speaking of a game that you know, some people turned off and thought maybe it was over, Rob, we got to know, man, was there, for folks of that are fans of the CX Collective, was there a lucky P? Was there like anything that you did that we should know that led to this turnaround against the Rams?
You see, the ridiculous thing is I'm not a superstitious person at all, really. yet I did have two of those magic whatevers, like to try. Like I had one, it was at the 2-minute warning, and I had one before overtime started. I got the lucky football out. Like it was, nice. It was everything. Like here's the other thing I did, which I completely forgot about this until you brought this up. So on the couch, on the left side of the couch, I was sat when the comeback was on. So I wouldn't move from that side. And then when they had the second 2-point conversion, I stood up to like watch it. And then it obviously failed. So I sat back down. And then as I sat back down, the guy come on and goes, well, they're looking at this as if it's a backwards pass. I was like, what? And then I wouldn't move from the seat until the end. And then I went for the magic slash and then came back and sat back in that exact seat. And I thought it was just those magical nights were back again. You know, we could all think of however many of them we saw in the Pete Carroll era, those crazy nights. And, you know, my neighbors, I've gone through a few next door neighbors. And, yeah, and this was another one where, you know, the noise levels at 5 o'clock in the morning, 5:30, whatever it was, were loud. Just incredible. And I'd written it off. I mean, I don't know what you thought, Brian. When the second interception happened, yep. I thought this is Green Bay last season again. I was thinking Sam Darnold's a major problem now. I'd already written my piece after the game because it was frustrating to watch. So why not just write the piece out? And there was a big bit on Sam Darnold's a problem now. Like we're going to have to start looking at what the future holds. He's just a bridge. if you'd said that, I was writing that, they're going to win this game. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Well, I mean, it's. I'm glad you brought up the magic thing because it feels like as good as the team is, until they have that kind of moment, you need that. And often you need that against one of your big rivals too, right? Like some kind of just shock that changes things. Now, it can be a blowout like the 42-13 game against the 49ers. But even that, you had, you know, Sherm's blocked field goal. You had the, you know, Cam Chancellor hit on Vernon Davis. There's a lot of moments in that game, but this one, by the way, I think it's hilarious. I think couch position is one of the most underrated superstitions. People talk about lucky hats and shirts and underwear, but I think everybody understands couch position. You got to be in the right one for the right moment. But with all that happened in this game, as badly as they played, the only other game that really I think comes close is the NFC Championship with the Packers, right? And, you know, Russ threw 4 picks in that game. Jermaine Kearse was terrible at times. Now, he dropped some passes. Some of them he would put on other people. But what do you kind of collectively come out of that game looking at the Seahawks thinking? Like, what's your take on the team that looked so bad, but then ultimately wins?
The two main takeaways are, one, they've got a lot of character. You know, that they are, you have to sort of be proud of the team that you follow when you sort of see a comeback like that, and that will stand them in good stead. And you're exactly right. It took the game against the Niners just before Christmas in 2012 to really believe that the team could probably win a Super Bowl. And you do need those moments. I have to say, though, like, once the euphoria had kind of worn off a little bit after 48 hours, they were quite bad in that game. Like, defensively, they had some real issues. Sam Darnold, I love the fact that he came back and he had that moment, and the next 2 days were not going to be filled with Sam Darnold can't win the big game talk, and that's not what we've started with, and what I do next week, we won't be talking about that I didn't have to publish the stuff I wrote about Sam Darnold, but this is a number of weeks now. It's feeling very 2022 to me, this, where Gino was probably a leading candidate for the MVP until he went to Germany, and then afterwards there was a little bit of a regression there, and it feels not identical but somewhat similar. And there were clearly issues. And when Ernest Jones said the Rams were laughing at them in the game, I can kind of understand why, because it did feel like an absolute hammering. It felt just like the Packers game last year, where they came to Seattle and just showed they were a tier above. And that was one of the things I wrote, that the Rams have shown today that they're a level above, that the Seahawks have still got a long way to go, that they probably do need to have a big acquisition of some kind in the offseason to get to this level. And that's what I was thinking. Now, I don't know whether winning the game changes that. Like, I'm not sure that I trust the Seahawks to win a number of playoff games. However, having said that, if they get the number one seed, you have to win two home games in a muddled NFC to get to the Super Bowl. And that's not unrealistic. It's not unrealistic for anybody who gets the number one seed in the NFC.
No, it's not. And so, I mean, that's kind of where we, I mean, we'll talk about the game from last night. I don't know if you watched the Bears Packers game. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That was another crazy outcome. But I think the most disappointing part of that game for me, everyone would talk about the Darnold interceptions or whatever, was the run defense, and the defense in general having coverage busts. And when you take away the team's strength, and Mike McDonald and what he is brought to the team, like, when that part of the team gets defeated, it really feels like, you know, okay, you're not going to win many games. And that's what the Rams did. They kind of like picked your biggest, toughest guy, and they showed that they were bigger and tougher for a lot of that game. But second half, again, they made some pretty good adjustments, and the run game for the Rams did slow down, and that's the second straight game that they've done that. And I'm like, why can't they just do it from the start? But I've asked this of everybody since then, Rob, but I think your interpretation makes total sense. At the same time, the Seahawks have lost the turnover battle by three twice and won one, and probably should have won the other if not for a 1 yard punt. So, like, are the Seahawks actually better than the Rams? And if they ever played them in an even neutral turnover situation, they'd win by 10. Like, how do you square that circle?
Well, the Seahawks probably should have won in LA, and the Rams probably should have won in Seattle. And, you know, it would be interesting to see what kind of game happens next, because the two games are very, very different. So I wouldn't be surprised if the third game was a totally different game. And maybe that'd be like a 6-3 or something, or maybe for the most part would be a bit like the game we saw last night until the end. I don't know. It's hard to sort of quantify. Matt Stafford, you have to have a lot more trust in him, I think, than Sam Darnold. That's clearly a thing. The Rams, for me, won the trenches until they didn't, which was towards the end of the game when all of a sudden Seattle's defensive line stepped up to the plate, and that was really great to see. The coverage situations were very odd. I don't understand how Puka Nacua does what he does. It felt as if you just threw the ball in his general direction, then he was going to make the catch every single time, whether he was covered or not. It was crazy. I don't know how you stop that. It's one of those, like, will you please stop this happening? How do you do it? Like, it was, every throw was he was making, coming down with it, contested everything. So they're a good team. The Seahawks are a good team. Sometimes, you know, you maybe benefit from, I think they benefited from the way the Bucs game happened. I think they learned from that. I hope they're going to learn from this. I'm glad that they've got a bit of extra time before the Panthers game, because I think that takes the edge off that emotional come down thing that could happen next week. I went into the game last night hoping that I don't know who you were rooting for, if anybody. Somebody said that it would benefit the Seahawks if the Packers won.
Yeah.
So I was rooting for the Packers. But then when the Bears won, I immediately turned on its head and thought, well, they're playing the Niners next week. So like they're going for the NFC North next week. They will want to win that game.
Yeah.
But then I suppose at the same time, they're still in contention for the number one seed. So it's not supposed to be easy. You're not supposed to just waltz to the number one seed. So, I don't want you to have two bye weeks, like thinking the week 18 doesn't matter either. So,
no, exactly. So that Bears Packers game, for people that didn't watch, was, I don't think, as dramatic as the Seahawks win over the Rams, but it was up there, and it definitely had its own mimicking moments to the 2014 NFC Championship against the Seahawks, because the Packers, instead of Brandon Bostic fumbling a onside kick, I think it was Romeo Doubs, and there is a big, huge pass in the end zone with a Packer draped all over the guy to win it. And Rob, you know, we know about this. We know about the 49ers. We know about the Rams. We talk about them all the time. Outside of those teams, you know, the Eagles played yesterday as well. What do you make of these other groups? Let's start with the Bears, because it's almost a joke now. Every time through three quarters, I'll send my friends who are Caleb Williams fans his stats, and it's like 5 of 20 for 110 yards and nothing. And then the fourth quarter, like, he'll come alive and do chaotic things, and like a lot of times they'll win. What do you make of that team? How serious of a threat are they?
Well, I think they're a serious threat because there's a real trend now of them finding a way to win in the fourth quarter. You know, Pete Carroll would absolutely love the way this Bears team played. He'd be marching
yes,
in there.
Yes.
Can you win a game in the fourth quarter? Like, he's that message personified, really, this Bears team. But there are sort of many moments when you realize this is still the Bears team that's underwhelmed for a couple of years as well. They've just kind of hit a bit of magic here. But as with teams like this, generally just run out of luck at the most important moment. And I do wonder a little bit whether they get into the playoffs and maybe they even win a game in the playoffs, but then it comes back and it's just a little bit too soon for them. Exactly the same with you and Caleb Williams. You're kind of watching him thinking, what is this? It's very unimpressive. But then the two plays at the end, the two touchdown plays, really good throws and really good catches as well, and they've got through. What do you think of the Bears? Because they to me are the team that I feel like I'm worried about. I will always worry about playing the Shanahan Niners. The Rams have shown that they're a good team in a tough contest. I also think, like, if you play the Lions, it could easily be like a gunfight. You know, it could be like, ooh, you know, back and forth all the time. But I don't know what a game against the Bears would look like, because the game we saw against the Bears last season, I don't think it'd be anything like that this season.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears are built on that offensive line, which is amazing because it was like their weakness last year, and they did a great makeover in one off season. And the run game, and they have a pretty good run game. I think we've seen one team truly run it against the Seahawks this year, and it was the Rams, honestly, in this last game until the Seahawks kind of stopped them. But even then, like, by the way, like, I look back at the full game numbers for the run game are not good for the Rams. They like averaged like 3 yards a carry, which did not feel like it. But point being, I feel like the Seahawks, if they play the run well against the Bears, I don't think they can win. I don't think their defense is that good. I don't think their pass rush is that good. And I think a team that doesn't have a pass rush, I don't think you beat the Seahawks. Like, I just don't, I don't see how that happens, because if you can't get Sam Darnold to make some really backbreaking mistakes, I think this team's too good in all of their phases to beat them, including the Rams, to be honest. So
last night, if Romeo Doubs catches that onside kick, the Bears would have lost at home without scoring a touchdown to a Packers team that didn't have Micah Parsons, that had Josh Jacobs had no business playing in that game. I have absolutely no idea why they made him active for it.
Yeah, he fumbled going in for a touchdown, right?
Yeah. And he just looked hurt. He didn't look like Josh Jacobs at all. And the other two guys were running well, so I don't know why they even played him. And then the quarterback goes out early in the game So you're playing the backup quarterback. You've not got Micah Parsons. Your best defensive weapon is injured and shouldn't be playing. And they nearly lost that game at home without scoring a touchdown. So that's the perspective. But all people are going to remember, of course, is the way that it ended and that explosive finale and Ben Johnson celebrating in the locker room again and the bit of magic again that's got the Bears through.
Well, and the Eagles too. I mean, I don't know if you watched any of them against the Commanders. Commanders were winning a lot of that game, and then they lost their backup quarterbacks. They're down to third string, you know, quarterback. And I'm just not impressed with that team. Like, I'm not. Give me your, like, outside of the Rams and the 49ers, which of the NFC teams would you least like the Seahawks to play? Any of them that, like, rise to that level?
I think the Packers, purely because for whatever reason, there's this like bad juju with the Packers, like in the Seahawks. Mm. Like especially if they didn't end up as the number one seed and had to go to Lambeau. Like sure. I will believe the Seahawks can win a playoff game in Lambeau when it happens. Until then, I will fear the worst on that. And I suppose that if you had to go to Detroit, they could get hot. Although they very much give off a vibe of a team that missed the boat, that had their sort of two or three year window and have maybe missed that now. Apart from that, there isn't anybody really that fearsome. It's the NFC West teams. And I imagine that at some point there's going to be an NFC West game in the playoffs, whatever combination of teams that will be. And that could ultimately be the de facto NFC championship game, whatever happens. They're the two. You know, they're the two that frighten me the most. And I don't know whether you'd be better off playing them in Seattle or not. Like, that's the strange thing. You might be better playing LA in LA. You might be better. We'll see what happens in Santa Clara in a couple of weeks. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think LA is going to be intimidated up in Seattle, given the way that they've played. I do think the Seahawks are probably a little bit better off, you know, I think playing the Rams in the elements than playing them indoors, but it didn't really seem to affect the Rams offense in this first game. Again, like, they came out so heavy on the run and were so successful with that. I do wonder if that's something that the Seahawks will address next time around. But part of the reason I was looking at the Bears, I was actually looking at, you know, random numbers. I was looking at pressure rates for defenses, and the, you know, the Rams, they're up at 10th, which is not terrible, not fantastic, but top 10's fine, right? But they're a pretty good pass rush team. You've got, you know, the Seahawks are fifth right now, for what it's worth. But you get to the absolute bottom of the league. Would you have any guesses of who ranks 31st and 32nd in pressure rate for NFL defenses?
Well, I'd guess Niners, because they've lost the pass rushers.
Mm-hmm. That's one of them. And the other is the next team the Seahawks face, the Carolina Panthers. Mm. So the 49ers are 31st and the Panthers are 32nd in pressure rate across the NFL. The Bears are 23rd. I don't believe a team that's got a lack of pass rush is going to be able to, you know, produce in the playoffs. So that's part of why I'm just not. I think the Bears are a little bit like the Commanders last year, I guess. Like, I'm not sure in the ultimate matchup with whether they can come through. But they keep winning.
Do you think the Seahawks remind you a little bit of the Eagles, maybe? Just because when you think about the Eagles last year, they didn't have an unbelievable edge rusher. Like, they don't have a Nick Bosa, Myles Garrett, Max Crosby. But they do have a deep defensive line. Their sort of best players are in the interior. They have complementary edge rushers. They have a defensive back in Cooper DeJean, who was a rookie and a playmaker, and Seattle has one of those, very different build, but has one of those kind of players who's having an impact as a rookie. And then offensively, you have obviously very good weapon in Jackson Smith and Jigba. They had AJ Brown, very different players, but still, the quarterback is not an elite quarterback, but is capable of producing, as we saw on Thursday night, some flashes there. The running game is nowhere near as good as Saquon last year. That's the biggest difference. And the offensive line's not as good as the Eagles as was last year. But I suspect there's not, you know, there's some teams that the Eagles will have played to get to the Super Bowl last year who are weaker than they were last year as well. So maybe it's not quite as tough to get there as it was last season.
I think that's a key.
Yeah.
I think that's a key, honestly. I mean, you only have to be better than the team you're facing. And I honestly think there's only one team that to me is still, generally been a better offensive, defensive, collective team than the Seahawks this year. And that's the Rams. Now, if you add in special teams, then it's Seahawks are right neck and neck. And I think that's one of the major differences. And the Rams did fire their special teams coach yesterday. But this is why, I mean, Rob, it was weeks ago that I was like, I don't think the Seahawks are going to lose another game. I think that they're going to be favored in all these games, and I think they're going to win all these games. I think they're done losing. Now, that looked really stupid halfway through that game on Thursday. But as of now, I think that's kind of the continued perspective. I do think that they should win against Carolina, and I do think that they should win against San Francisco, and I think they should win their playoff games. Now, the Rams are probably the one team where it's like, you know, they show up, and I wonder. But as you kind of have absorbed this whole season to this point, what did you get most wrong? Like considering what you thought this team was going to be, which players you thought were going to be good, what do you think shows up for you as the thing that maybe you got most wrong about this team?
I'm going to have a look, because I thought the running game would be better than this, but I don't think that. I think most people thought that, so I don't think that's a glaring thing. It's quite difficult, because I don't, this isn't just to say that we've got everything right, because we haven't, but you and I did at least a couple of collective shows before the season, mm-hmm. and we're both very optimistic about this team, and I think that should be sort of emphasized here today, that's this is not a surprise to some of us. There have been times, I think probably one of the worst things I've done is break my cardinal rule of tweeting during games, which I promised not to do this season. And yet halfway through that game on Thursday, I was tweeting away because I needed to vent. I needed to say something. And it was a sort of a release for me. But, people were then going back after the game and finding the tweet that I said, we've got a quarterback problem here. And it was as if I was saying it as he was throwing the game winning 2-point conversion. Yes. But that, the running game is definitely one. I did believe in the offseason that they'd had. I'm trying to think. There will be something that I obviously, because you get things wrong all the time, don't you? So there will be something. I mean, maybe I would have thought Elijah Arroyo would have had a more impactful rookie season.
That's not a bad one. I mean, as an individual. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I did not expect Uchenna Nwosu to have this, have this much of an impact this year. It's kind of waned a little bit from a pass rush perspective of late, but he's had a stronger year than I expect coming off the injury. And I thought
Zach Charbonnet would be a lot better than he has been. That's one that I definitely
didn't see. Ken Walker would have produced a lot more than he has. So that's two. I guess I thought up until this last few games, I had thought that I was wrong about the passing game, and that the passing game was going to struggle and the running game is going to be the strength. As of late, the passing game has kind of struggled a little bit. It looked a little bit more like maybe what I thought it was going to look like. Where do you think that's going to end up? Like, do you think we're going to see it recover? Do you think it's just like, this is what the passing game is now? What's your take on that part of the Seahawks offense?
Yeah, I think this is what it's going to be now. I think we're going to have to hope that the good plays outnumber the bad plays, but I appreciate that both will exist. That Sam Darnold is going to throw either turnovers or near turnovers. He is going to look a little bit more jittery in the pocket than he did earlier in the season. There were games earlier in the season where he was just so composed and was standing in there and just dissecting defenses. The Commanders game was a good example of that in the first half. And now the feet are going quicker. He looks as if he's sort of processing things in a little bit more of a manic way, whether that's his brain saying, don't make a mistake, or whether it's just, I've made mistakes. Like, I can't imagine what it must be like in there when you've got all of the focus on you and you've sort of had that game against the Rams and you're trying not to do it again. I think that's going to be a problem, and I won't be surprised, sadly, if the season ends with another bad Darnold moment, and that ends up being our sort of really disappointing full stop on the season to send us off into the offseason, sort of everybody debating the quarterback. But that's viable. I think the offensive line has just taken a little bit of a step back. It feels that way across the board. So I do think, and also like Jackson Smith and Jigba somehow like still manages to find a way to get up to 100 yards, even when he has a quiet game. I mean, that's crazy that that seems to always happen. But we really need them to continue to find ways for Rashid Shaheed to have massive impacts in games, because it feels as if he doesn't have the punt return, if he doesn't have the run towards the end of that game. You do wonder a little bit, you know, Cooper Kupp chips in, but who else is going to help out here? So certainly the running game, look, it's great. The Ken Walker plays the other night, fantastic. You know, Zach Charbonnet had a couple of moments as well. It still doesn't feel like a consistent, reliable lean on that. Sam's having a tough day. Let's just turn to the run. Like, how many games in the you know, 12 years ago, Brian, could the Seahawks be really bad in the first half and then just come out after halftime and go, it's a Marshawn half now. Now we're just going to hand the ball off to Marshawn. You can't do that with this running game.
Not so far. At the same time, you look at their last, I don't know, since week 10, honestly, on the ground, I'll actually pull this up real quick. Their running game has been 198 yards, 135 yards, 114, 125, 129. Then they had the down one against the Colts. It was really bad, 50 yards, and then 171 again. So, like, all of a sudden, if I was to look back, and if you give me the grace of doing this search real quick, I think what we're going to find, if we look since week 10, they're probably a top five rushing team in terms of rushing yards. Like, but I'm with you. I don't feel it, does it? I don't believe it yet. Right. So, here, let me do this real quick. Of course, they've played an extra game, so this is gonna, this will be, probably not the best way to look at it, but, they're in the top 10, solidly in the top 10, without doing the extra math, since that time. So, would that be the biggest thing that would increase your confidence that this team can go where they need to go, is if like all of a sudden the running game is just 150 yards, 130 yards every week?
Yes, it would, because I think the teams would then have to adjust and play the Seahawks the way they were playing them earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. I think that would give you a lot more opportunities for Sam Darnold. It would mean that if there was ever a game where Darnold just did not give you the great deal of confidence in the pocket, that you could just turn to that. The run game, every handoff just feels like a referendum on how good the running game is. Whereas I think when we saw a bit of that with the Rams, and we certainly saw it with the Colts, like not just Jonathan Taylor either, Abdullah was, like, every time they hit the line, and either the linemen had just pushed forward so they could get 3-4 yards every single time, or they would drive contact an extra yard or two every time. And it meant they were always getting positive yardage. And with the Seahawks, it does feel a little bit more boom or bust. Like Ken Walker could have the run that he had at the start of the second half against the Rams, or either of those running backs could get hammered for a 3-yard loss as soon as the ball's handed off to them. And I'd almost sacrifice the massive play for a bit more of the 4 yards, 4 yards, 5 yards, 3 yards, you know, just you're always falling forwards, because I think you can just sort of manage the game a little bit more. And that's how, look, Sam Darnold, maybe he'll have a Flacco-esque postseason and be the Super Bowl MVP, and we can all rejoice in that and have the conversation about whether he's elite for the next 7 years like Joe Flacco. But but really, I think if we're going to win the Super Bowl, it's probably going to be with a running game combining with that defense. I think that gives us our best chance.
I don't think it has to be dominant, but I do think it has to be credible and a little bit more consistent. A couple other quick numbers here, and then we'll do some super chat questions for us. But so yards before contact per rushing attempt, the game against the Rams was the third best of the season for the Seahawks. And yards after contact per rushing attempt, it was by far their best. They had 5.4 yards after contact per attempt in that game. So there are some signs, and people are like, oh, maybe like Jalen Sundell is the problem because he came back against the Colts and the running game went bad. So maybe Olu needs to be in there. Well, Jalen Sundell was in there. Well, maybe like this will be a problem with Charles Cross out. Well, Josh Jones was in there and they did pretty well, both pass protection, you know, on that side and running, which I know demonstrated some of the points you're trying to make. So there's no question that the coaching staff knows how important that running game is, but I'm with you. I don't yet go into a game thinking like, oh, the Seahawks run game is going to eventually take hold, and like they're running out of time for that to be the case.
Can I ask you a question? And this may be hard for you to answer because you actually have to go and speak to the man and I don't.
Sure.
So it could be a bit of a cringy, awkward question, but I genuinely just like Mike McDonald. You know, the manner that he has after the game, like, what a football team, man. You know, like, that was getting me fired up, like, on about 1 hour sleep after that game. Yeah. You know, I just like that. And I like the fact that he's created the kind of football team that I like. Now, it can't just be for me. Like, and I'm not expecting the Seahawks to do that. If they created a winning team that was, the complete opposite of what my idea would be, I couldn't care less. Like, I want to watch them win. But it does feel as if they've produced the kind of tough football team that there's a reason why I have Cam Chancellor and Marshawn and Devin Witherspoon behind me, because I like the tough football teams like that are, you know, those classic sort of AFC North style. Like, I'm happy to have a modern progressive passing game to accompany that. But I first and foremost, I don't want to watch finesse football. I want to watch tough. And he's created that. And, I think to be here 2 years on and, you know, to see the way that it's obviously gone in Vegas, it's not all Pete's fault. Like, that's my word. Like, who could have turned that around? Probably nobody. Good luck to whoever may end up taking that job next. But to be in this position where the Seahawks are the number one seed in the NFC with two games to go, and that if they just win those two games, we will be able to sit back and watch Wild Card Weekend, knowing that the Seahawks are already into the divisional round, knowing that they're one game away from finally getting back to the NFC Championship. I'm really grateful for that, because that's what you want. It feels like it's been a while now. I want to see it again, and we're seeing it hopefully this season.
Yeah, well, and I think Mike McDonald's exactly the type of coach I expected him to be in terms of the type of team, which is why he was the guy I wanted. But if your question was, you know, do I like the guy? I had no reason to know one way or another whether I'd like him, because how someone coaches on the field, you know, could be wild disparity. And he's super high integrity. He's so high integrity that I think he has trouble with injury report stuff. People think it's just because him being cagey, but I think he hates saying something and then it being wrong. So, you know, like, he's high integrity. He's very authentic. He's very low ego. And he's a guy that does not think that he's the greatest thing, greatest gift to whoever's around him. And I think John Schneider's a big part of why Mike is the coach, because that's something that's very similar about both of them. Like, neither one of them believes their own, you know, press, right? Like, they're not super arrogant. They're not going to sit there and just think that they're the smartest person in the room. In the case of Mike, he might be, like, in a lot of these situations. And I asked him after this last game, you know, what he used to talk about having bad dreams about tough conversations he'd have to have, right? And so I asked him, like, what do you dream about now? He's like, those play calls. Like, I think that game against Sean McVay, part of what I said, Rob, is I think before they played the first game, I think these teams are going to play three games, and there's almost nothing that could happen in the first two games that wouldn't convince me that the third game was still going to be an absolute battle, because both of these coaches, no matter what, they're going to make adjustments. Sean McVay made adjustments from the first game and they worked really, really well. Mike McDonald made adjustments in this game. They worked well. He made adjustments from last season to the first game that worked well. These two guys, they're not going to sleep until they figure out a way to get an advantage over the other. And it's like a supercomputer going against another.
I think Sean McVay has looked very stressed in the two Seahawks games.
Isn't that nice?
Yes, and I think that's a show of respect because he seemed a little bit more caffeinated. Maybe that's because of he had a child this week and hasn't slept and has needed the coffee to get him into not falling asleep during the game. But he just seemed very on edge this week before and after the game. And I felt that way for the first game. He seemed different, like almost a bit more dislikable on the sideline because he just felt like they had to have that. And after the game, I watched the locker room stuff when the Rams beat the Seahawks. It had a bit of an edge to it. Like he knew this was such an important game. And I think that is a sign of his respect to the team and the coach that he's facing. But I like that because it all seemed a bit too friendly and nice before Mike McDonald came along. So
didn't you love all the shots of McDonald with the play sheet over his face and McVay with the play sheet over his face and the national perspective and narrative starting to be, okay, the Seahawks have one of those guys. Like it is big brain versus big brain. And it's he's ours. He's ours forever.
Yes. And even more so because when I was driving yesterday, I put on a Albert Breer, apologies, I've forgotten the chap he does his podcast with for the Sports Illustrated, but they basically did an hour talking about the coaching carousel that's coming. And all of the names they were talking about for the teams like the Giants and the Titans and maybe the Raiders and stuff like that and the Browns, and then combining those people with GMs. And I just thought, I'm so glad I'm not a fan of one of these teams. Like, you're not saying any names that inspire me. You're throwing GM names out there who've got no real track record other than they work with someone who was a good GM. And I don't want to be in that world. I like to know that we have a coach who's going to be here a long time, with a GM who's going to be here for an even longer time than he already has been. Don't have to worry about that. I'm not concerned. The Seahawks may well make a decision, Brian, this offseason that I don't particularly care for. That's fine. Like, they're not going to do everything that you want to do, and the chances are that they'll get it right, and I'd get it wrong anyway. So, like, I'm quite happy with that. And I think that's all I've ever said that you can ask for your team. Yeah. When I complained in the past and people, the Reddit threads were always great that people would send me of, 500 comments telling me using words I won't use here. I just wanted faith and belief that the people who are running your football team are going to have it going in the right direction. And we're there. So therefore we won't win every game. We might not win a Super Bowl. We may win a Super Bowl. I'm here for the ride.
Yeah, I love that. And you know, I was trying to think back, like the only offseason moves that you're saying, like they're going to make offseason moves you probably won't like, and that's sure. Like, I think you and I loved pretty much everything they did this past offseason. The only two things that come to mind for me I wasn't a huge fan of was, one, I wanted them to get a veteran interior lineman. They didn't, and I think they tried, but they didn't. And I think it ended up being a good thing that they didn't sign Will Fries to that deal. And the other is I wanted them to double up on offensive linemen because they didn't get one in free agency in the draft. You know, I was interested in, like, I would have prioritized that probably over a tight end in the early rounds. But that was I liked Elijah Arroyo a lot. So I wasn't I didn't hate that move. But I mean, it's amazing how many moves they've made like this offseason and even last offseason that I like. And if you look, we were talking about this in the Real Hawk Talk crew. If you look at their first rounds, Rob, the last few years, and let's put Nicky Minwori just outside that, right? It's to pick 35, right? Gray Zabel, Nicky Minwori, early second, Byron Murphy, Devin Witherspoon, Jackson Smith and Jigba. Like, that is an unreal stretch of first round, early round picks.
I thought they had a fantastic offseason, and there were a few things. Like, I wanted them to sign like Drew Dolman, for example, who's had a good year for the Bears.
Yes.
But there never seemed to be any sort of buzz there, and I wasn't going to sort of kick off because there's always a chance that a team, he wants to go to Chicago.
That's my read. I don't think he even was an option.
So I'm not going to get caught up on that. And then I'd have been open to Will Fries, but when it didn't happen, I understood why it didn't happen. But the funny thing for me was, after years of people saying that I hate the Seahawks and I just do it for clicks, and like I run a free blog, like I click away, like it's I get no financial benefit from clicking. But then the two drafts that you've mentioned, and that the general off season, I've given like a hyperbolic grade. Like it's an A plus, it's an A.
Yeah, yeah.
And then fans from other teams are going, you're just giving them an A because you think everything the Seahawks do is great. And it was so funny because for years, yeah. like the reaction was the opposite of that. And here I was being accused of being just positive all of the time. Yes. No, and I'm looking forward, obviously, to the next few weeks. See, I am looking forward to this offseason because I think it's going to be a different offseason. We've talked about it. The draft does not look good. And I think it's going to be interesting. Anything could happen for me. Like it could be, there could be a big trade. There could be some kind of big move that happens in this offseason. And it might not be an offseason that is defined by a thick, loaded draft class because I don't think any teams are going to have that, frankly, even the teams with lots of picks.
I think they're going to trade their first round pick. I can't imagine they're going to look at who's in this draft and say, like, oh, Max Crosby's a lot more valuable than anyone we could get in this draft. And so we're going to trade a first and whatever else we need to trade for that to happen. That feels like a very clear possibility this offseason.
Can I ask you a couple of things there, just because I know you want to move on to the super chats, but I know this is a conversation for March or February, but two things. First of all, if the Raiders said, you know, and we know this draft stinks, so we want a high pick in 2027 for our best player as well. The first question is, would you do that? And the second question is, if for whatever reason you can't do Max Crosby, would you look at someone like Trent McDuffie, for example, who has been reported in the last week could be a possible trade option? Obviously knows the area, played for Washington. And if you are going to lose Reed Woolen, could that be somebody who only costs, for example, one high pick as opposed to two?
There is zero chance in my book you trade high draft capital for secondary players. Like I'm pretty much out on that. I don't know if they are. So if you're asking what I think they would do, I'll put that hat on. But if you're asking what I would be supportive of, I'll answer that first. I would not be in on that at all. The Crosby thing, like, and it's not just for anybody. I wouldn't trade, like, go hard after Trey Hendrickson in the same way. I don't think he's the same kind of player. Crosby is like amazing against the run and a great pass rusher and a great leader and just a great energy guy. For someone like him, yeah, I think I would go, because here's the thing, Rob, it's not just about who's available in the 2026 or 2027 draft. The Seahawks are chock full of rookies and young players, and they've carried, even on the practice squad, so many young guys. I think like it's maybe a third of their roster are rookies. Like, it's a huge, huge number. I think that's the group that they're going to kind of roll with. And I think that their core players, you know, I don't think they're going anywhere. Byron Murphy, Devin Witherspoon, you know, like Julian Love. The only thing I'd say is Leonard Williams. Like, I think defensive tackle, you know, you wonder a little bit, but then Riley Mills, I'm very curious. I saw some flashes in that game, Rob, and you've seen him in college.
Really,
Zach Allen was the comp. If he's anything, if he's like 70% of Zach Allen and he and Murphy are together the next few years, hell yeah. So I would absolutely, to get pure edge rush, I would make that trade in a second.
I mean, you know, Riley Mills, and this is just my grade, you know, people can have their own opinions on that. I had him as a second rounder before he got injured. Yeah. Like he's got something there, and I would be all in. Like, this is the thing, is I hope that this means something to people. Like, you know, people will not read, not as many people will read Seahawks draft blog if the Seahawks don't have any freaking draft picks. Okay? So when I say I would trade, you know, happily trade your first round of next year and a high pick in 2027 to go and get Max Crosby, I say that because I want the Seahawks to win. And I think you're now at a point, like, they've not been there until now, but you are now at the point where if you throw Max Crosby on the field on Thursday, I think that's a very different game. And I think that's possibly I get it, like, there's still things, and you could, you know, trading for him does not prevent you from still making an addition on the offensive line or whatever. You can still do something there. But you put him on this defense, and his character, like, doesn't it just seem like a perfect fit? Like, fit the team for him as well, by the way. Like, the team, it feels like this would be the kind of team that he would want to play for, the kind of coach that he would want to play for. I'm convinced. I thought it might happen before the trade deadline, and I'm convinced that if it doesn't happen, it will not be for the want of trying.
Yeah. No, I mean, they've made the effort, I think, at least twice to acquire him. So I do think that that's realistic. But, I mean, the fun part is we get to find out the rest of this year, they might be able to win a Super Bowl without him. Mm. And then if you add him, then I think the rest of the league is just going to be like, oh, shit. So I think pure edge rush to me is, and it's not like they don't have any, but it is a solidly above average edge rush is where I'd put it. It is not a special one. It is not one that can win against any offensive line. And so getting somebody that's in that caliber, I think, is the only real thing that I'd throw out there. I do wonder, you bring up Trent McDuffie. I think I know why. You're talking about maybe losing Reek Woolen. Josh Jobe also, like, I don't know if I have the same confidence in how he's playing of late. Where are you on that secondary right now?
I think they need somebody else. And, you know, all the way through the game, people were going, it's time to put Reek Woolen on Nakua. Mm-hmm. And I feel that way. I think Josh Jobe is the kind of depth cornerback that you can feel good about. Like, if he had to play a game in a pinch, fine. But I would like to have somebody a little bit better there. I also accept that the league's not going through a period where, you know, not many teams have two really good cornerbacks. So, and I'm not sure that you necessarily need that. Like, Devin Witherspoon is a good player. Puka Nacua can still can make plays on him. So you really, it sounds bad. Unless you were a top cornerback, you know, the Revis Sherman types of previous years, you are going to give up some plays. You are basically a limit the damage player at cornerback. And the way that the NFL has gone, it's harder to limit the damage than it ever has been. So I don't think investing a ton in those positions, unless you really have true top players or players who you feel are just vital to your DNA, as they clearly feel Witherspoon is the way to go. But I'm because I think this draft is so bad, and because I am convinced that there are going to be players that have possibly late second round, early third round grades that are going to sneak into the top 40 here because they have to, because there's no alternative. I'm sort of thinking, okay, I can imagine a situation where the Seahawks and other teams have a list of trade targets and they will start at the top and work their way down that list, because you are going to get better value on the trade market than you are perhaps drafting players next year. Like, good luck getting an edge rusher in the next draft. And I'm sure that, you know, the draft media will tell you it's good and it's better, and because they've got a job to do, which is to sell you the draft and to put faces to the draft. I just think it's about trading. I've got a list of a few names already that I'm sort of thinking, okay, you start at the top and you move down that list. And not all of them are first rounders. Like, some of them might be sort of day two types, but that's going to be the key. I think that what will define the offseason and who does well and who does not is, like, who can make the right moves in the trade market, because your draft and your free agency is never a place where you win championships. It just isn't. That's what's ultimately going to determine things. Although, having said that, the Seahawks had a championship free agency period, all said, as did the Bears, maybe. But then the Bears traded for two offensive linemen. It's smart trades more than anything for me.
Patriots, too. I mean, free agency, Milton Williams, they did some big stuff there. Yeah, I was actually thinking about writing about that at some point, that free agency has kind of had a resurgence in terms of how important it was. You think about the Eagles last year with Zach Bond, and it used to be that free agency is not how you build your team. And lately, I feel like there's been some pretty important. I mean, Sam Darnold was a free agent too, by the way.
Yeah.
So, as I
was saying it, I was thinking, no, this doesn't chime with what happened this year.
It's been always the case, but lately it feels like a little different. Speaking of that, would you pay Reek Woolen?
No, I mean, how much? I would do probably
mid-20s to low-20s.
Then no. I would do is I would, with most of you guys, I'd let them test the market and see. But then once you do that, you're kind of saying to them, we're not that interested. Look, Woolen's, I just wish he, just wish he'd turned a corner in the last, you know, fully. Like, he has played so much better. He had a rough start to the season. He's played so much better. There's just something there that, and you're going to have to pay a lot of money. Jackson Smith and Jude, if, like Brady says that JSN and Witherspoon are going to get paid next year. And he said Cross was going to get paid. Teams don't have just endless loads of guaranteed money to put in escrow or whatever. Like, you're not going to be able to do that. One of the things about trading somebody is that ultimately the contract is, like, Crosby's contract kind of locked in. You're not going to be paying him a new contract when you trade for him. And the dead money is so low for the Raiders that it's practically like, there's no restriction on that trade whatsoever. That's why it's perfect. But that's a way to acquire somebody without spending a shed load of guaranteed money. So if they do pay those three players, then I don't know how you pay Reed Willen $20 million a year. Look, if he goes for that, and someone will pay him that, there might be an opportunity there. He might want a fresh start. The Seahawks might want to move on, but he'll need replacing. That's the thing. If he and Maffei leave, they need replacing. You're going to have to find somebody there.
Yeah. Well, I think they look at Jared Ivey and Connor O'Toole as
interesting
guys that they're grooming there. I think Chris Paul Jr. is sitting there on the practice squad, and you know, they've got a lot of these guys, just Amari Kite, left tackle, that they've been grooming, former Alabama, you know, guy as well, UCF. I think there's a lot of guys that they've been kind of, Bryce Cabledue and Mason Richmond have basically been redshirt guys. I think they have plans, and that's part of why I think Clint Kubiak sticking around another year would be really important. You know, John Benton, that whole crew, Rick Dennison, and you know, see if those guys can come through.
Do you think he will, by the way?
I do.
Do you know what I thought was really interesting? I'm trying to find out. I've forgotten his name because my memory is like a sieve. Now I'm in my 40s.
It gets way worse.
So the talk is that the Cardinals might look at Grant Yudinski.
Yudinski seems like an obvious name to be out there. Super smart dude, quarterback whisperer. There's some people that say that I was talking to, I think, some of the Vikings guys, and his absence from JJ McCarthy's development, I think they think has been a big problem. So yeah, he's a smart dude. He seems less weird than Jonathan Gannon, that's for sure.
And I found that interesting because Kubiak's name is sort of tentatively mentioned in that conversation, but the feeling was that Yudinski, like, that's the one who is going to get the chance. Now, in a time when there's a lot of defensive coordinators like Chris Shuler and the guy at Green Bay and stuff like that are getting taught up, Jesse Minter, if there is only going to be maybe sort of one young offensive coordinator who gets a head coaching job, if Yudinski is kind of jumped to the top of the table because the Jaguars are somehow, you know, in a position where they're going to win their division and have got double digit wins, then that could help Seattle because I think it is important to keep everybody together.
I think if I was hiring for a new head coach this year or next year, my top candidates that I think would be difference makers would be Robert Saleh, Chris Shula, and Yudinski might be the guy on the offensive side that I'd be most intrigued by. And that's like unbiased. Like, I like Clint Kubiak. He wouldn't be in my top 3 to 5 choices of guys that I think are out there that could make a difference. Now, that doesn't mean the other franchises are going to feel that way, but I think those guys are, especially Saleh and Shula, I think they're pretty solidly separated from the rest of the pack.
And he is who he is as well, isn't he? Like, part of the getting a job is walking into a room and sort of blowing the people away in front of you. And I mean, maybe he's just got a different side to him that we don't see in a press conference, but it's quite hard to imagine that if he comes up against a charismatic individual, that if it's a close call, that might be a difference maker.
It definitely could be. All right. A couple quick super chats. I'll let Rob go. Jay Malfair says he did get the onside kick, though. I don't know if I understand that reference. I know we're talking about the Bears and the old Seahawks game. Dalvin Vasquez says 2 games versus Rams, only 1 point and 1 yard separates them. Clearly, both have plenty to improve on. Seahawks are clearly a top contender. I think you've seen that number, right? That's pretty crazy. How that's
unbelievable. Been.
All right, next one, as I try to get rid of spam. All right. OEL says, going to relax and enjoy watching Red Zone. But Brian Robb, I want so badly for Grandpa Rivers to beat the Niners yes. on Monday Night Football. That would be hilarious. What do you think the chances are, Rob?
Well, I think seeing the way that they played and also the coaching, what an unbelievable coaching job that was by Shane Steichen and Lou Anarumo last week. And that gives me some faith that they could do it. And the Colts feel like they've got a bit of a spark to them. I think the fact that they doesn't have to play Nick Bosa and Fred Warner will give him an opportunity. And look, I did think after that game, like, wouldn't it be great having just failed to beat the Seahawks if he could then actually get the storyline win that has everybody on the talk shows the day after talking about Philip Rivers, if it was against the Niners. So yes. I feel like I've been waiting all season for the Niners for everything to catch up with them, and it hasn't happened. And maybe it's not going to happen ever. Or maybe it is now that they play the Colts and the Bears and the Seahawks. I don't know. But I tell you, I like Philip Rivers. I respect everything that he did last week. I thought his interviews before and after the game just make him seem so likable. So I will be cheering hard for any for as much as I would ever be able to cheer for any non-Seahawks team in that yeah. game.
I mean, I think he will not have problems with getting the ball off too quickly against a 49ers defense that doesn't rush the passer. And that offensive line was fantastic. It's really, really good. And the 49ers struggle there. So it would be a lot of fun. It would be a lot of fun. And I will say 49ers fans would not be ready for what would happen. They like, that is one of the only teams I think that still has a path to be the number one overall seed and to miss the playoffs entirely. And they're not like the 49ers. They lose to the Colts. Then they got the Bears, the Seahawks. They could easily lose out if they lose this game. And then if Detroit wins, I think, against the Bears last game of the year or something like that, the Lions would make it in and the 49ers would miss the playoffs entirely. How fun would it be to win the number one overall seed and knock the 49ers out of the playoffs on their home field to end the season?
Well, that'd be most sad. It'd be almost worth having traveled to Seattle to watch the Niners beat Seattle for the second time in 3 years. But like as I've said to you before, Brian, like 49ers fans in the UK are amongst the most irritating individuals you could ever meet. So that would be especially enjoyable, yes.
All right, a couple more of these, Garth Knight. Will Darnold ever marry a pop star and have a baseball agent that busts Schneider every couple of years? I don't think so. Matt in Beaverton says, it's amazing to see how the team is building championship calluses. They're learning how to win in so many ways. Atlanta, Indy, Rams mission over BS. Eric Tamora says, how much does the defense benefit from having three defensive minds, McDonald, Frazier, Leslie Frazier, adding dirty to work through the defensive adjustments? And would the offense benefit from having someone Kubiak collaborate with? Well, Kubiak does have Rick Dennison, who's been an OC, John Denton, who's been there for a long time or been in the league a long time, Justin Outen for run game. So I think he's got some decent stuff there. I think he also collaborates with Mike on what works and doesn't. Garth Knight says, Brian, you hate that McDonald and Schneider are Harbaugh's with Jay on staff. Get over it, dude.
I don't understand that.
I'm going to rephrase that. Brent Yonis says, I'm finally mostly recovered from my hangover first game. Never lost hope and never missed cursing LA as loud as possible. Please remind Venmo ID. Oh, it's venmo.com/Nemhauser if you want to do a super chat that doesn't go 30% to Google. I always appreciate that. Peter Gohawks, you guys tried trading two firsts and Walker for Bijan today. No.
You guys training two firsts and walk. Does he mean Ken Walker?
Ken Walker. Oh, I mean, he's not going to be, he's not under contract.
I wouldn't trade two firsts for a running back ever.
Ever. Even as much as I like Bijan Robinson. Like,
sure.
Would you do anything to acquire Bijan Robinson? Like,
well, maybe. I mean, look, if there was a chance and it was like your first round of next year and it exhausted every other option at different positions, maybe, but I don't think you'd have to do that. I think you could probably get Devon Achane for something that's a lot less than that. So if you really wanted to trade for somebody, no.
Yeah, I don't think I would either. I'm not thinking running back as much as other people are. All right, Rob, what's coming up for you on the Seahawks draft blog?
Well, it's Christmas next week, so I don't know how much. But obviously, if I could just sort of say to check out Bump and Stacey on Tuesdays at midday. And then obviously the videos go on YouTube as well. And the Seahawks Collective, of course, which follows after that. And I'm on Puck Sports every week. And I've obviously done a bit on Charles Cross on the draft blog at the moment, and I'm sort of really sort of ramping up my thoughts on what may happen in the off season. Usually at this time I do a Christmas mock draft, Brian. I am not doing any mock drafts.
Love it.
I can't. It's just it's the worst draft I've covered in since 2008. So
I need a quick review from you of your cruise experience. Are you pro cruise or anti cruise?
So I'm not the kind of person, Brian, that I would have ever expected to enjoy a cruise. It's not something that's been part of, I've never really done it before. And we went on a cruise last year to Alaska, which was phenomenal. Like, we were very lucky with the weather and enjoyed it. And it was a Disney cruise. I've got two young kids, so it felt like a way for me and my wife to enjoy seeing Alaska and for them to not be bored stiff. So we enjoyed it so much. We went to this car and I loved every second of it. Like, everything about it was great. And I do think the Disney cruises in particular are pretty good. I think a Disney adult, as you put it, like there are definitely some of those on the boat. But the other thing about it was, generally when you go away on holiday, there are people there who annoy you, or they're just not on the same kind of holiday as you are with two young children. And on this cruise, you only really had Disney adults who keep themselves to themselves and families with kids. So everybody was in the same kind of boat, and you know, no pun intended there. And it was great. And just quickly, the one thing I found so amazing was, I find it really hard to switch off. I don't know what you're like, Brian. Like, my brain is going all the time, whether it's day job stuff, Seahawk stuff, the blog, the streams. It never really switches off. I don't sleep much. And when I went on the boat, they did this drawing stuff so you could learn to draw like the different Disney things. And I'd sit down there and I got addicted to it. And I'm not an artist. I drew all of the different, I'd go every day and do these things. And it was the first time in years I was able to sit there and just switch everything off and focus on that. So I'm doing drawing at home now because
I love that, dude.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I quickly, because I know I've kept you long, but Rachel, my wife, you know, for one thing, bought like some kit for us to do painting together. And I was like, oh God, like, I don't have an artistic bone in my body. And we sat down, we did it, and I kind of had the same experience. Like, I was like, I actually kind of like this. And the painting turned out like good enough that I wasn't like super ashamed of it. And I like kept doing it. And I haven't done it lately, but something about it was just totally turned my brain off. So I don't know, man, we are seriously cut from the same cloth. So we'll, next time we will trade, you know, showing our terrible artwork.
Art with Brian and Rob.
exactly. All right, Rob Staten of the Seahawks Draft Vlog. Thanks, man, and have a great rest of your day. All right, that was Rob Staten, one of the best guys to bring aboard. Great guy, great Seahawks perspective. Been doing it pretty much as long as I have. I think I have him by a year. I think I started the Hawk Blogger in 2007. I think Rob started Seahawks Draft Blog, if I'm right, in 2008. But I mean, it's fun. It's fun to talk with people that have been as unhealthily obsessed with the Seahawks as you have for as long as you have, and kind of taken some of the same pursuits along the way to get there. There's another super chat. I will get to that in just a second. Before we do, let's make sure that you head over to simplyseattle.com. Amazing deals right now on all sorts of Seattle sports gear. There's some new Seahawks gear there that they just are releasing. So go there. And right now, until December 24th, so another couple of days, not only will you get 15% off your purchase with code HawkBlogger15, but 5% of whatever you purchase will go directly to the Fred Hutch Cancer Center's Patient and Family Assistance Fund. That provides vital help with transportation and temporary lodging for patients, fighting for their lives. And if you buy a Simply Good hoodie, that's $25. They're awesome. And another $5 will go to the same Fred Hutch Cancer Center's Patient and Family Assistance Fund. So perfect time to get a great deal, get that last minute present for yourself, for somebody else. Use code HawkBlogger15 and do some good out there in the world. Also, download the Sleeper app if you haven't already. You can get $20 without even making a deposit. Plus, use promo code Hawks and you'll get up to $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. All right, let's get these last super chats in the books here. Okay, no, we got that already. Aiden Simmons says, any concern to the slow starts from JSN? A couple weeks in a row, he hasn't gotten off to a fast start. No, not really. I mean, I understand why you've got that as a concern. You want to see him just balling all the time. I thought, like, I'm in a very small minority that was fine with the way the Seahawks started this game. I was fine with it. I thought they scored a touchdown on the first possession. We're doing pretty well running the ball. Even the second possession, they got 8 yards on the first carry, and they short-circuited, but I didn't think it was like, oh man, this is a terrible plan and things aren't working. Third possession was a false start on Anthony Bradford. You know, they can't get behind the sticks against a good defense like this. And then, you know, they weren't able to make that possession work, which I'm sorry, like that's kind of like having one possession not work is acceptable. And then their final possession, they were moving the ball down to score. Like Cooper Kupp, if he doesn't fumble there, I think the Seahawks are going to score a touchdown. They were at least going to score a field goal. So to me, it was much more about the limited number of possessions than it was about what they did with those possessions. And the stats kind of back it up. This was the most efficient run game the Seahawks have had all season. So I think people are so focused on what was happening with the pass game, and I understand why, that they're missing a little bit of the progress that's being made on the run game. And I think that could end up being a bigger deal in the course of this postseason. All right. Thanks to everybody who joined late as I just kind of rolled out of bed and set this up with Rob and I didn't give you much warning, but always appreciate all of you folks who are obsessed with all things Seahawks. I'll be back tomorrow. I have not planned exactly what my show will be tomorrow or whether I'll have a guest or what we'll do, but we'll figure that out. And until then, make sure you enjoy the rest of the Seahawks victory weekend with no worries other than just to watch the other teams play. I'm going to go try to watch this Carolina-Tampa Bay game somewhere. So see you all soon. Take care.